Hi, well, thanks for inviting me to come to this conference. By way of introduction, for those of you who don't know what the RIN is, we're a small research and policy unit set up in the UK about 6 years ago now, with a remit to look at changes in the research information, the scholarly communication system, if you like, focusing on two kinds of issues. Firstly, the changing behaviours and attitudes of researchers in a rapidly changing communications information landscape, but secondly, changes in the roles of information service providers in that landscape. And as Mark has said, what I'm going mainly to be talking about in this presentation is the results of a study that we produced earlier this year, which looks at the economics, if you like, of possible transitions in scholarly communications with a focus on open access. We know, I think, already from various studies that have been done, and I guess I don't need to convince this audience in particular, that if we could, as it were by magic, move towards a completely open access world tomorrow, next week, next month, there would be significant, we would move into a better world. Not only would there be more access, there would be cost savings, and there would be significant economic benefits across the world. We know that. What we don't know so much about is what a transition towards that world might look like. We're not there yet, that's clear, although some significant moves have been made along the road. But we know it's going to take, I think, a number of years before we reach a completely open access world, even if we do. So what we wanted to do was to examine what a transition, what a possible series of transitions might look like over a five-year period, looking at the costs, the benefits, the risks, and the opportunities that would arise. So this is a piece of work, as I say, that was commissioned by the RIN, but with very strong involvement from the different groups of players across the research information community. So funders, research councils in the UK, the Wellcome Trust in the UK, which has been in the vanguard of promoting open access, JISC, the Joint Information Systems Committee, Research Libraries UK, representing the library community, but also the publishers through the Publishing Research Consortium. I'll talk a bit about what the process involved in this study was. Firstly, we developed, in collaboration with all these stakeholders, a series of scenarios. Scenarios as to where we might get, plausibly, but with some challenge behind these scenarios, plausibly over a five-year period. So we set a series of scenarios for green open access, for gold, what we call delayed open access. This wasn't one that we had initially thought that we would look at, but it came out quite strongly in lots of the discussions we had, because there are a number of publishers, as you know, who will provide delayed open access after a year, 18 months, 2 years, whatever. An extension to licensing, which I'll talk about in a minute, and transactional models, essentially pay-per-view. So we developed those scenarios, and I'll talk a bit more about each of them in a moment. Then we went through a process of analysis, looking at, firstly, changes in costs over those over the five years, both one-off costs and ongoing, continuing costs. Then looking at the changes in access, and I'll say a bit more about what I mean by that in detail in a moment. But also looking at what the drivers behind these different scenarios might be. And finally, of course, we then had a series of results from these analyses, looking at costs, looking at the changes in costs, looking at the changes in access, and also looking at some cost-benefit or benefit-cost ratios. So let's say a word more about the scenarios. And I should emphasize that I'll present you with some figures in a moment relating to each of these scenarios. What I want to emphasize is this is an economic modeling exercise essentially based around comparisons. Don't pay as much attention to the precise figures involved as to the comparisons between the figures for the different scenarios. Okay, a bit more about each of the scenarios. And remember, this is setting up scenarios for plausible but challenging changes over a five-year period. So with green open access, our assumption behind the scenario was that with mandates from funders in particular, and they've been the big driver certainly in the UK, that they would lead to, with greater enforcement as well as encouragement, an increase in deposit rates in open access repositories to between 40 and 60% of article production. Institutional mandates we thought actually had rather less of an oomph, if you like, behind them, and so 15 to 30% deposit rates. And we also looked, and I'll say a bit more about this in a moment, about the difference between where we are now and where we think we might be in 2015. So green 2015 and green starting from a much lower base than that, green zero we called it. Delayed access, as I mentioned, I mean, there are publishers already providing delayed access. And we thought that it's plausible to assume that in response to the kinds of pressures that are coming from funders and from institutions with their mandates, that some publishers might want to go down that road on the grounds that, essentially defensively, if you like, it gives them greater control over access, albeit in a delayed way, than the green movement in particular does. So we set up a scenario where 25%, quarter of all articles are available open access on publisher platforms in this delayed way, with embargoes of between 12 and 36 months. Gold open access, well, I don't need to say much to you about some of the drivers here. I mean, a lot is happening both on the supply and on the demand side, I think, to promote gold open access. Our assumption for 2015 is that 40% of articles in biomed, 15% in the rest of science and technology, and about 5% in humanities. And I'll say a lot more about this in a moment. We looked at variants to do with levels of article APCs, or author processing charges. License extension was essentially looking at a model under which, through one mechanism or another, for the higher education system in the UK and also for the health system in the UK, the National Health Service, which is a big user of journal articles, of course, that there would be licenses covering all institutions, so all universities and higher education colleges on the one hand, all NHS institutions on the other. Three quarters of articles for HE and just over half for the NHS. And finally, we looked at transactional models, essentially pay-per-view. I mean, there are some developments on that front at the moment, and I'll say a bit more about that in a moment. Okay. So the first thing that we did, looking at those scenarios, is to look at costs. And I should emphasise here that all the comparisons that I'm going to make here for these scenarios are between a baseline of not in 2010 or 2011, where we are now, but where we think, according to current trends, we would be in 2015. So we're looking at the scenarios which I've just set out, not over time, but over a 2015 baseline. So costs. And I've got two panels on this side. On the left-hand side, panel A, you'll see an analysis of one-off transactional costs. Relatively modest for green, delayed licensing and licensings for the HE system or for the NHS. Relatively higher for gold. And that's because there is an infrastructure, certainly in the UK, for green, for example, at the moment. There's less of an infrastructure for gold. Certainly on the demand side, there's less of an infrastructure. We don't have very well established funding mechanisms which would support a large scale transition to gold open access. That has to be set up, and there are costs involved in that. There are also some costs on the supply side, of course, in setting up billing systems and so on for publishers who don't operate in this way at the moment. The second panel, panel B on the right, looks at the continuing costs. And models that over a 10-year period, essentially. And let me go from the top to the bottom. The dotted dark blue line at the top shows the relatively high cost of what we called the license for the whole HE system in the UK. That, of course, depends on what kind of premium the publishers would demand for a license that covers the whole of the HE system as distinct from individual universities, which is the way they operate at the moment. But, I mean, this was the assumptions that we made were checked by the publishers, and that looks a relatively high cost. The next line down is the green one, which shows also a relatively high cost for green open access continuing. And that's because of the cost not only of setting up, but of sustaining institutional and other repositories. The dotted gold line for gold shows the relatively high cost of gold if APCs are at a relatively high level. And that level was calculated on the basis of an analysis of a range of publishers' costs. We got cost information from a range of publishers, which suggested that average APCs would be at a level of around £2,500 if they were to meet the costs that they currently incur. That's about 2.8 thousand euros, about 3.9 thousand dollars. Now, those are relatively high charges. The red line is the next one down, which shows the cost for a license for the whole NHS system, relatively low. The light blue line just below it shows the cost for licensing for delayed open access, where the cost is essentially nil. It's something that toll access publishers would control themselves. And the line at the bottom is the interesting one, which shows the negative cost savings, put the other way around, of gold open access with relatively low author processing charges. In this case, about £1,400, €1,600, just over $2,000. That is based on a calculation of the current level of APCs that are actually being charged in the UK at the moment, those being paid, for example, by the Wellcome Trust. Now, that may be, the current low cost may be partly driven by the expansion of the recent expansion of open access at, if I can put it this way, and I don't mean this at all pejoratively, at the lower cost end of the market. But I think it's interesting that, I mean, the wide, to show the wide variation in this analysis between higher end and lower end APCs. So the next thing that we did was to calculate what would be the increase in access in each scenario. And actually they were not by design, but they turned out to be broadly similar for each of the scenarios. We calculated this on the basis of what we called a standardized unit of access. What do I mean by that? A standardized unit of access to take account of different kinds of access or different restrictions on access which arise in different scenarios. So whether it's immediate or delayed, whether it's to the version of record or to some other version, whether it comes with full functionality or whether it's only to a PDF, for example. So we adopted discount measures for each kind of restriction on access, which of course applies more in some of these scenarios than others. So again, it's to try and get the comparison between the scenarios on a relatively equal or consistent footing. We also, by the way, and I'll come on to this in a moment, we calculated what we called a unit of useful access. It's a bit more controversial, but the economists would stress that there are laws of diminishing returns. So if you already have, as it were, 90% of access to everything, then the value to you in your institution of getting access to the next 10% is less than if you're operating in a setting where you have only 10% access to only 10% of the total population of articles. I mean, the value then of the next 10% is considerably more than it is to the people who already have 90% access. But that's not essential to the analysis, the rest of the analysis that I'm going to talk about. But it is, I think, an important element. So having done all that, we simply calculated cost effectiveness by looking at cost per increased standard unit of access across the scenarios. And I think here it's interesting to look at the comparison between green on the left-hand side and gold in the middle. Green costs less than gold if you assume that APCs are at the higher end. But again, at the lower level, at a cost of around £1,500, £1,500, gold is showing actual cost savings per unit of access. It also shows this, by the way, that the licensing scenario, again, is relatively unattractive in cost terms. Final point I should make, again, is that delayed access is essentially free of cost in this kind of modelling. We then got to the stage of calculating some benefit-cost ratios. These are based on what the economists refer to as the Solow-Swan growth model, which is it attempts to show ways in which increased access actually has benefits in the economy more widely to the innovation system. It actually helps in a relatively minor but nevertheless significant way to stimulate economic growth. The blue bars, the blue shaded bars in this chart show the upper and lower bands of our calculation of benefits over costs. And note that all of these scenarios show positive benefit cost ratios. They're all greater than one. The upper bar shows the upper level in that shaded element in blue shows the benefit just on the basis of the standardized unit of access. The lower end of the bar shows it on the basis of what I referred to earlier as useful access, taking account of that element of what I talked about, the diminishing utility, economic utility, if you like, of increased access. So we're deliberately showing a range there rather than a precise figure. But you'll see that, again, for green, the benefit cost ratio is between 5 and 8. And what the little diamond in the middle shows is the midpoint of the range, which is around 6.5, 7. The highest benefit cost ratio is for gold at the lower ABC level, very significantly higher than any of the others, apart from delayed open access, which, because the cost is essentially nil, is off this scale. It's sort of up there somewhere. The other point to note, though, about these calculations for gold at the lower end is that at the lower end of APCs, is note we put a thin line through the bars for each of these scenarios, and that line is extends way beyond the bar, both up above it and below it, for gold with low APCs. And that reflects differences in the benefit cost ratio when you subject this these cost calculations to sensitivity analyses. Sensitivity analyses to do with levels of take-up, for instance. If you change the level of take-up by plus or minus 10%, for gold that has quite a big impact. But where gold is particularly sensitive is to assumptions about levels of take-up, and remember this is a study focused on the UK, levels of take-up in the UK as compared with the rest of the world. If you assume that gold take-up in the UK is at the same level as the rest of the world, then you're in the bounds of the central bar. If take-up is higher, significantly higher in the UK than it is in the rest of the world, then that means that the UK bears a large part of the cost, but doesn't get so much of the gain in economic benefits. And that would apply to any country in the world. So I think there is a message here that it is important that we try to move in step with other nations, that this open access isn't an issue. And again, I don't need to convince this audience. It isn't an issue where individual countries can step too far ahead of the pack without carrying a risk that they, as I say, bear the costs without getting so much of the benefit. We looked as we had to do, of course, at risks involved in this. I don't think that we, of course, you can't capture all the risks in such a complex landscape. Indeed, there are, of course, risks in doing nothing, huge risks in doing nothing. But what we tried to do is to look at relative risks, the relative levels of risk in the different scenarios, under three heads. One to do with the risk to the scholarly communication systems system as a whole, particularly to the sustainability of a quality assured, peer reviewed system that we have at the moment, and to which I think most people attach a good deal of importance. And here you'll see that in green, we think there's actually quite a high risk to the scholarly communication system. Gold is a relatively low risk. We then looked at risks that would happen actually during the transition. And here the differences are relatively smaller. I mean, a medium level of risk, I think, both in green and in gold. Much higher in extending licenses, because there are issues about cost sharing there. and risks to the achievement of the benefits that I showed on the last slide, where, for the reasons I've just explained, the highest risk is in gold because of these issues of different levels of movement in different areas and different countries. Okay, so let me try and summarise our conclusions for each of the scenarios. Delayed open access is the lowest cost kind of scenario that one could imagine. It's the closest to a scenario that has very little cost or no cost to it at all. And so it has a very high benefit to cost ratio. The question is whether it's plausible. Why would publishers do it? Why would publishers operating in the predominant subscription model, why would they want to do it and carry the risk to themselves of loss of subscriptions? It seemed to us also that from a policymaker's point of view, there are very few levers that policymakers can pull or push that will persuade publishers to go down this kind of road. And because of that, our conclusion was that it was that a delayed scenario is unlikely to lead to huge increases in access over the next 5 years. I've said relatively little about pay-per-view because actually it's quite difficult to analyse in the kinds of ways that we did for the other scenarios. It does clearly have some potential to increase access for some key target groups that don't have licenses at the moment. And it clearly has the potential to act as a complement, if you like, to licenses, subscriptions. The danger for subscription publishers, of course, is that pay-per-view essentially cannibalizes, eats up revenues that they're currently getting from subscriptions. So, I mean, there are issues for publishers as to the extent to which they want to promote pay-per-view and the kinds of calculations that they have to make about levels at which they would set the pay-per-view fee as distinct from the subscription fee. And there are some quite difficult trade-offs that they have to make there. So again, seems to us that it's unlikely, even with relatively low pay-per-view fees. Our base model was $10. We looked also at scenarios which took that down to $5 or even $1, and it didn't seem to work. And there are relatively few policy levers. And of course, if what you guys are doing continues to expand, then the demand for pay-per-view is likely to decrease. Extensions to licensing, making licenses operate across all institutions. There, the cost effectiveness essentially depends on the premium that publishers charge to give everyone access. And the benefit-cost ratios are relatively low, and there are big, as I've said, transition risks. There are big upfront costs in negotiating and setting up the systems for such licensing. And there are big difficulties, and we've seen this in the UK, for example, in Scotland, where they've started to develop systems. There are big issues arising about how you allocate costs across different institutions. And because of the additional costs involved, it seems to us pretty unattractive in an economic fiscal environment in which university costs are and funding are under great strain. Green open access. Green could clearly lead to very substantial increases in access. Not necessarily to the version of record, not necessarily to the version that has all the functionality attached to it. And so, I mean, there are issues there. On the other hand, it's relatively cost effective because certainly in the UK and in many other countries, there is an infrastructure already in place. And so there are relatively low transition risks. The big issue is the risk to the scholarly publishing system as it exists at the moment. If you just go for green, it has the potential to lead to subscription cancellations, and that then brings threats to the viability of the journals, of the publishing system, if you like, on which green itself depends. So there is a sense in which green, as a system on its own, is not independently self-sustaining. Gold, on the other hand, our conclusion is that it clearly does have a sustainable business model. It has a funding model, certainly on the supply side, that works. Clearly, though, there are some issues to do with, as I said, the setting up of more effective funding models from the supply side, because at the moment, certainly in the UK, they don't work very effectively, with one or two exceptions, such as the system set up by the Wellcome Trust. It does bring, clearly, some economic efficiency benefits too. There are much clearer price signals that are sent to authors as well as to readers, if you like, and we think that it means that there are lower barriers to market entry than there are in a subscription system. So high benefit cost ratios and savings, particularly at the low APC level, to the UK and within the UK to the university sector. It's not a zero-sum game in terms of, you know, the one sector like the university sector paying for increased access to the commercial sector. There are savings to the university sector as a whole. Of course, that doesn't mean that there are necessarily savings to each individual university. Universities that are big producers of research will bear more costs. Universities that are less research intensive will see big reductions in costs. So there are some issues within the university sector there. And those savings appear only if APCs are low enough. And our calculation was and is that if on average APCs are at around £2,000 or lower, on average, I can't stress that too much. That doesn't mean every APC has to be lower than £2,000, just over $3,000. Then we calculate that there is a saving to the system. Of course, there are transition risks. There are risks to do with pricing. There are issues also to do, and this is something we can't really capture in the kind of modelling that I've been talking about, to what I refer to as a funding hump. That's during the transition, there will be a period during which institutions are paying for subscriptions and paying APCs for the same titles, as it were, or to the same publishers. They're, you know, we can't switch overnight from one system to another. So subscriptions will continue while APC expenditure is going up. And I've already mentioned the issue of the UK as distinct from global take-up. And as I say, this is, well, I put it here in terms of UK global. I mean, you could say Denmark global, Estonia global, whatever, when the same issues arise. So our overall conclusion is that open access scenarios are the ones which offer most scope to increase access cost effectively, much more than delayed open access, transactional models, extensions to licensing. That what the our recommendation to policymakers is that they should encourage the use of green open access repositories, but be very cautious about pushing down embargo periods to a point that puts subscriptions at risk, because if embargo periods go down too much, then there is the risk that subscriptions will be cancelled and that some journals become unviable. But gold is preferable, we think, from a policy point of view, provided that average APCs remain below 2K, that UK doesn't move out of step with the rest of the world, and also that the concern about hybrid models, I don't need to go on about that at length. There are these concerns about double dipping and so on. And not just double dipping. I mean, some real issues about what the plausible levels of APCs on the one hand for hybrid journals are, and the reductions in subscription fee levels. I mean, there are some quite difficult issues there for publishers, I think, to work out. So that's a fairly quick run through what is a fairly complex piece of work. You can find all the details of the report and the very detailed backing papers which support the kinds of conclusions I've been talking about on the RIM website. I should mention Cambridge Economic Policy Associates, which were responsible for the modelling. Mark Ware, who some of you will know, who was also a key member of the team, and the various bodies which alongside RIM were responsible for overseeing this work. So thank you, and I'd be very pleased to answer any questions.
Does this work? Okay. Thanks very much, Michael. Can I just make a remark? So I do think this has been an important study, and there's a huge amount of momentum, it seems to me, in the UK in particular at the moment, around really trying to figure out how a transition, and in particular a transition towards more gold open access, could work. So I wondered actually if you had any comments. There was this recent announcement from Willits on a working group to look at some of these issues.
I mean, I think that in the UK, a number of funders, research councils in particular, have said that They want to encourage moves towards gold as well as, or even in preference to, green. Candidly, they haven't actually done very much about it up to now, but there is that intention, I think, to do so. And the new still relatively new coalition government in the UK has sort of set its stall in favour of what they call transparency in a number of areas, not just this. But open access does, of course, fit very neatly into a kind of transparency agenda. And recently, it was a couple of weeks ago now, it was announced that a new independent, so it's not a government run, but a sort of government-encouraged independent working group has been set up with representatives from publishers, including Wim van der Stelt from the from Springer, I think, specifically wearing an OA kind of hat, but also funders, research organisations, and so on, have been given a remit to try to define ways in which to get to an open access endpoint. That working group hasn't even met yet. We'll meet it for the first time in the middle of next month, but it should be producing a report in the late spring, early summer of next year.
Thanks. Any other questions?
Michael, I was just wondering if you could expand a little about your concerns about green open access and the risks to scholarly publishing. Mm-hmm. There's an example that's been available for the past decade, and almost two decades now, is the archive. Mm-hmm. Physical Review D, about 98 to 99% of the papers published in Physical Review D appear in the archive with no embargo period, and yet subscriptions still flourish. It's as if the community is willing to accept the peer review process because they need some sort of stamp of approval within the archive. Mm.
Yes, I think archive is an interesting, obviously, but not necessarily replicable example, I think. Particularly the theoretical particle physics community, and it's a very particular kind of community. The vast majority of the papers are published with vast numbers of authors. They are, in effect, peer-reviewed before they even get into archive, because they are circulated around the groups that create them. Before they even get into archive, there's then a sort of process of external peer review that goes on before they get into one of the half dozen journals, which they all the major ones then end up in. But of course, essentially, we're talking about six journals out of 20,000, 20 plus thousand peer-reviewed journals. And I think it's very dangerous to extrapolate from that example to the wider community. And certainly, if you talk to subscription-based publishers, they are hugely concerned about the risks to their subscription income coming from green. And there is some evidence actually to support their concerns coming from, there have been some fall-offs in subscription income and some closures of titles in areas, for instance, in the social sciences where green has taken off. Now, but whether or not you think that the concerns that subscription access publishers have are fully justified or not, they do have them. And that in itself makes for a risk.
Like the discussed example, I mean, if there are any journals in humanities, social sciences where you have evidence, then this should be made more explicit as a case study or whatever. Mm. I mean, then you have, of course, to share this information, which is a publisher might not like so much. But right now, it's just a statement, and I cannot see the point of evidence. I mean, from the viewpoint of libraries, it's definitely not the kind of, you look how much of the content of the journal is available in repositories, you look at your budget, and then you see, okay, this is what we can distribute to the faculties, and they have to decide which are the most important journals are within the framework of the budget they have. Yeah. And they will not check how much is available, they will check, this is the most important journal, and we would like to have full access to that journal.
I take that point entirely. Of course, there is a big study underway at the moment, which I think is mentioned in the documentation you have in your PAX the Peer project, which is trying to look at those kinds of issues and to gather some evidence on it. I think there is nevertheless an even broader question about whether the value add that comes from any great extension of the repository movement, the value add over and above the kinds of infrastructure and services that are developed by publishers operating wholly in an open access world. And the kinds of services that the bigger services on the repository side, such as PubMed Central and so on, are offering. I think there are real issues that we need to consider about that, and they will no doubt come up in the working group.
Okay, hang on a second.
I wanted to ask you about your kind of the top end of gold of around, you know, 2,000 pounds.
Yep.
That's kind of the top end of what publishers, OA publishers are charging. And
yes.
You know, everybody in here is and doing a pretty good job. That seems to be a pretty high level. I mean, and I'm just curious about your concerns about it going above that when funders do have some control and saying, this is all we're going to pay. And, and a lot of publishers are doing a pretty good job at somewhat less. It seems like we got pretty good cushion in there at that price.
Well, let me emphasize once more that we're talking here about averages rather than in individual examples. But this was based on an analysis of publisher costs across the system, obviously including predominantly non-OA as distinct from OA publishers. Obviously, at the top end of the market, as it were, if we're talking about, you know, Science, Nature, PNAS, and so on, where you have very high submission to publication ratios, rejection rates, if you like, putting it the other way around, then cost, unit costs of publication do tend to be relatively high. It will be very interesting to see how the new Wellcome Trust sponsored OA journal actually operates and works in that kind of environment, because of course they are very much going for the top end of the market. and let me emphasize that I'm not using top end and lower end pejoratively at all. I'm just.
It's gone half past, right? I think so. I think we probably should break now. So we've got half an hour. Start again at 11 for a mega session. But before that, I'd just like to thank Michael again for a very informative.